Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show today, Steve Fezzik of pregame.com will join us. We'll talk NCAA tournament, how to win your bracket pools, how to bet the tournament, some things to do, some things to avoid. Steve is about as good as anyone when it comes to this, so always fun talking to Steve. We'll get to some college basketball here in a minute as it is a busy college basketball time of the year. But we'll start quickly just with baseball. I had Tim Kirchhen on Wednesday, talked about the Cole injury. The time we recorded it, we really didn't know much about the severity of it. I threw out June 1st as like a best possible case, just top of my head. Like, hey, I can't see him pitching before June 1st. And since then, we've got an update, but we didn't get much of an update. Maybe by the time we listen to this, I guess Cole was flying to LA and get more opinions, things like that. I mean, the Yankees just don't tell you anything. It's a tear. It's not a tear. It might be. It could be. You can't get a straight answer out of them. You can't get a straight answer out of Boone. He does so much double talk where it's just you get confused listening to it. But he's going to be out for a bit, which we expected. So that really puts a lot of pressure on the Yankees to go out and get a pitcher. And with Dylan Cease getting traded to the Padres, it has to be Snell. Jordan Montgomery is a nice little stopgap. He'd help, but that is not replacing Cole. It has to be Snell. They have all the money in the world. They're worth $8 billion. Snell won the Cy Young last year. I know there's some regression coming. He left a lot of guys on base. He had a lot of walks. He doesn't pitch deep into the games. All true. You have to go out and get Snell. This is a short window here to win a championship where Judge is getting older. Soto, you might only have for 1 year. You can't just punt away the season. Hey, say, hey, we're going to roll with Cortez and Rodon and Stroman and Schmidt. It's just not good enough pitching. And who knows if and when Cole will be back. If you got it back June 1st, again, I threw that date out as where, hey, he misses 2 months. That's probably a start a week, a little more. So 10 starts, you can go 5-5 instead of the 8-2 or 7-3. You'd probably go with Cole. It's not the end of the world. But anything other than that, if you do not add Snell, if you do not add that caliber of pitcher, and that's really the only guy out there now, Cease would have been, I guess, somewhat on that level. Montgomery's okay, but he's not on that level. You got to go out and add Snell. If you don't add a pitcher like Snell and you're missing Cole, there's just not enough starting pitching. Now, they'll hit. They'll be able to win a lot of these games with their offense. If Judge is healthy, which, again, I mean, we're going to sit here all year saying if this is healthy, if that, I mean, Judge is already dealing with an ab injury. Who knows? He said if it was regular season, be playing. We'll take his word for it. But he's fine now until the next injury pops up. I mean, it's toe, abs. It's always something. It's WebMD with Aaron Judge, where it's always something with him in terms of the injuries. And you can say some of them are fluky. There's probably some truth to that. But you just look at the back of the baseball card. He doesn't play a lot of games. Usually, other than the contract year, and there was one other year, but other than that, he's pretty consistently missing a big chunk of games. But if he's in there, if he's in the lineup, I mean, you're going to have a hell of a lineup. You get Dominguez back, you got some more lefty pops. Soto's obviously one of the best hitters in the world. But the idea here is to win a championship, and this is not a championship pitching staff. You have to go out and get Blake Snell. We'll see if they do. I'm skeptical. We know their MO recently, and that is profits. It's about money, and you win a few games along the way and you get in the playoffs. That's all they really care about. You get more revenue, but it's not championships or nothing like it used to be with George, where it's win at all costs. That's just not their way of doing business anymore. I know the payroll's still up there, but they've been so passive in free agency, and this is a perfect opportunity. Like, hey, if you're serious about winning, it's hard to say you're serious about winning if you're not going to go out and add Snell with this staff the way it is. And Cole, who knows when he comes back, how it'll be. Like, he's the first time he's really dealing with an injury. So it's not like he's going to come back and you're counting on him to throw 100 pitches, 7 innings a game, 100 miles an hour. If he's dealing with an elbow injury, I mean, when are you getting him back and what version are you getting back? You have to go out and get Blake Snell. We'll see if they do. I'm very skeptical they will, but really inexcusable not to. Just quickly on the college basketball before we get to Fez. Again, these games, with the conference tournament structure, these games just come so fast and furious. It's hard to do a breakdown of games one day or another day and have it not be dated. I will say St. John's gets a huge win on Thursday. They punched their ticket. They will be in the tournament. Talked about them for a few weeks. Really, since they lost to Seton Hall, really, it started with the Seton Hall loss that Sunday, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think it was the February 18th, where Pitino ripped the team after. After that, they played well. They beat Creighton. They beat up on Georgetown and DePaul. We said, hey, they got an easy schedule coming up. If they can beat Creighton, they got two layups, and you win one of the biggest tournament, you're sitting on 20. They're sitting on 20, so they'll be in. I'd be shocked if they weren't. Seton Hall becomes an interesting team going into Thursday. Lenardi had Seton Hall as one of the last four in. He actually had him as one of the last four buys, so he had him. Last four buys is the teams that make the tournament. They're in the main draw. They don't have to go to date in that play-in scenario. He had the last four buys: Michigan State, Oklahoma, Seton Hall, Mississippi State. So Seton Hall, maybe they can hang on and still be in the last four and not have to play in a play-in. Maybe they're in the play-in. I'd be surprised if they got left out entirely. I guess some of it will depend on the rest of the bubble. A team we talked about last week, is really interesting, and they're going to be the team I'm most fascinated to see what the committee does with them. I'm very skeptical that they get in. I'm rooting for them to get in as Indiana State. Lenardi has them as the last team in going into Thursday. The other last few in, Colorado, Virginia, and St. John's. St. John's will move off of that list and be pretty securely, and I'd be shocked with a 20-win Patino team that's playing well the second half of the season. I'd be shocked if that St. John's team got left out. I'd almost be surprised if they got into the play-in scenario. They should clear the play-in, although, you know, there is TV at stake. And the thing that put them in the tournament, the thing that made me like them to make the tournament, is the thing that might bite them in terms of being in the first four play-in. They might want them for ratings in that Dayton scenario, Tuesday and Wednesday with those play-in games. So the fact that they're marketable, they're attractive from a TV perspective, that helps them in terms of getting into the tournament. That might bite back in terms of them having to play in Dayton the first four. But they're going to be playing postseason in the tournament one way or another, whether it's in Dayton or whether it's into the main draw. Indiana State team that's fascinating. 28 wins, not really no marquee wins. Lost to, you know, Michigan State, got buried by Bama. They had some one really bad loss. I think it was Illinois State. It was like a quad four loss. So they're going to be fascinating. The committee is usually not kind to these teams. They're not a blue blood. They're not a team. I mean, you can make an excuse to leave them out, is I guess how you could put it, where I could just say, hey, they didn't win their tournament, they didn't win their conference, and they don't have any big time wins, so we're going to leave them out. I hope they don't. They're good on offense. They're fun to watch. They're what makes the tournament fun. They're good for college basketball. I hope they get in. I'm not sure they will. So those will be the teams I'm keeping an eye on. But other than that, we will get the bracket Sunday. We'll do a show right after the bracket with Kev O'Neill. We'll react to who got in, who got out. Obviously, the lines, futures. We will break it down wall to wall, maybe do some extra shows next week. So we will have it covered. I'm excited. This is the time of the year where, you know, conference tournaments, you wake up, there's a game on. You go to bed, there's a game on. UConn will be in the mix this weekend, at least making to the semis in the Big East tournament. So we'll see if they win the Big East. They haven't won a conference tournament in a long time, so that'll be something to keep an eye on. But other than that, when you get the brackets, then the lines come up quickly thereafter. It's a lot of fun. You look for what lines you like, what lines are off, you think, what lines are going to move, and you go from there. So a fun time of the year. Weather's getting a little warmer. NCAA tournament around the corner. The selection show just a couple of days away. Before you know it, baseball, which I think they're starting in South Korea. It's Padres, Dodgers in South Korea in the next like week or so. Which I don't like here is opening day for a lot of these teams falls on the same Thursday as that Sweet 16, which I don't like. I don't think it makes any sense. And opening day should be its own special thing. Put it on a random Monday afternoon where, all right, if you play the title game that night, it's one thing. But let opening day breathe. Let it be its one thing. Don't have it competing with the Sweet 16, which I don't like. But fun time of the year. A lot of college basketball. We'll talk more of that next with Steve Fezzik. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can hear them on pregame.com. The Dream Preview, the only two-time Super Contest champion. He joins us now. It is the great Steve Fezzik. Steve, what's going on? Thanks for coming on.
I have no idea, Will. I'm all over the place. I'm behind in my accounting.
All right. A few days from Selection Sunday, let the audience be a fly in the room. The selection comes out 6 o'clock. We see the bracket 6 o'clock Eastern. Very quickly, the lines get posted. Just take the audience, take us through what the next 90 minutes look like for you.
Yeah, so got my Don Best odds screen up and looking for openers. And I don't have power ratings on all the teams, but I've got a good feel for, you know, the top, certainly top 50, and looking for mistakes. So looking for what Circa's going to post, what DraftKings is going to post, who's going to be first to market. Not unusual. You'll see one place put up a pick'em, another place put up a plus three. Well, if I see that, I got to fire on both. If I have an opinion, I just fire on one of them and pretty much just trying to fire into what I believe look to just be flat out mistakes, bad numbers.
Do you find that with March Madness, there's so much more eyes on these lines, there's so much more public attention? Does that give you more value on the underdogs because public bets favorite, or it's, hey, it's March Madness, people want to root for upsets, root for the underdog, figure the games are closer? What's your just general betting strategy, March Madness?
The consensus feeling is that people want to root for the underdog, but the truth is they're rooting for the evil queen and king. Because if you go into any sports book and you see a public team like Michigan State when they're good, they're not good, obviously, this year, money's just going to pour in on Sparty. And every time Sparty hits a three, the sports book is going to erupt. I can actually tell, especially later on a Thursday or Friday, based upon the volume in the sports book, how I'm doing. If it's very, very loud, I'm probably having a terrible day because all of the highly public teams like the North Carolinas and the Dukes are rolling and I'm likely invested plus 17 on their opponents when the market line might have been 15.5 at post at the sharp books.
Bracket pools. A lot of people listening will do these, whether it's 50 people, 100, 1,000 people. What would be some just general tips for how to win your bracket pool?
If you're heads up in a bracket, who's going to do better? Take all favorites. If there's 10 people in your bracket, you take almost all favorites. If there's 100, well, now you got to diversify and start taking like maybe a number 4 seed to win it all. And if you got 1 million people in your bracket, like an enormous contest, well, now you can have a lot of fun and you can pull the Wishnev and take the San Diego State and the Florida Atlantics to both make the Final Four and win $1 million, providing, of course, you actually submit your bracket instead of driving to Arizona and forgetting to put that in. I'm sorry, Todd. You'll probably be able to pick up $1 million this year. True story. So Todd, like, he never submitted his bracket. He would have finished second in the DraftKings contest last year.
Yeah, what Steve is referring to is last year I did a mega podcast with Gil Alexander, Todd Wishnev, and Jeff Parles, and I picked at Florida Atlantic to go to the Final Four, and I was outdone by Todd Wishnev, who picked UConn to beat San Diego State in the final. And I know a lot of people listened along, like just mix and match with some of our picks and did well. Doug Wedge is a listener, did well, but Todd did not enter a bracket. And Gil told him multiple times on that podcast, you got a bunch of crazy picks. You should really enter this into some larger contest. And of course, Todd did not. And boy, that's a tough one.
Well, the irony was that it would have been perfectly fine if he had said, you know, I was busy betting. He was in Vegas and I didn't have an opportunity to play, but he actually got in his car, drove over the dam. And this is something that a lot of professional bettors think of this. We're supposed to be in the sports betting capital of the world, Las Vegas. And there are people that drive to Arizona. They cross the Hoover Dam and they do so they can play against the FanDuels and the DraftKings and the like, and have access to books with much more liberal menus, provided, of course, that they're still allowed to play, which is becoming a more and more difficult thing. If there's one theme, I would say, well, I looked at a blackjack players forum from 1999, and it talked about sports betting, and it said no camouflage needed, no cover needed, no barrings. Everyone can play. How the world has changed, because now there's whole videos out there on how to look like a dummy so you don't get backed off when you're betting sports and not allowed to bet anything significant.
I know you're more of just a generalist in terms of these teams, and you know, you look at locations, who's got hidden home court advantage, things like that. But are there any teams you're looking to either fade or looking to back once this bracket comes out?
I don't like Sparty. I think they're way down. I think, you know, Northwestern's a good bellwether for the Big Ten. When Northwestern is good, the Big Ten in general is bad because Northwestern is never good. I think they lost to Chicago State straight up as a 24-point favorite this year. But and Northwestern's banged up. So I would be looking to selectively fade Big Ten teams, specifically Northwestern and Michigan State would go to the top of the list. Iowa also. Iowa just beat Northwestern. Northwestern was down 3 starters and Boo Booey wasn't 100% to end the game. And Iowa still only pulled away at the very end. So there's another team. I don't know if Iowa's going to get in. They're going to need a couple wins. But I'd love to see Iowa do a nice run through the Big Ten and then get smashed in the first round.
Do you feel like these lines are generally sharper than they were maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago? I remember some of these 12, 13 seeds that were live. They used to be getting, I don't know, there was some 13 seeds you could be getting 9, 10 points, double digits. Now, when the bracket comes out, I mean, we're going to see some of these 12. It's not uncommon that a 5-12 can be like a pick 'em now. Do you feel like these lines are just getting generally sharper?
Yeah, like the poster child was, I think, 20 years ago. Vermont was playing Syracuse, and the Maple Syrups were catching 13 at open. And a day later, it was 12. A day later, it was 11. And it wound up closing like 8. So every day, the line moved a point. It's a different world where now if that opened 13, within an hour, it would be down to 8.5, and it would get smashed. Having said all that, you know, fast forwarding when I'm like, you know, in my retirement home in 10 years and 70 and still trying to bet sports, we'll be talking about how easy it was to win back in 2024. And those were the good old days. So, I mean, there's always, you know, still opportunity. You know, my pet peeve, I do have to mention this. If I hear one more expert, like when they ask, who do you like? Right. And here they come. Oh, I like the New York Yankees. I just bet them under 93.5 wins in pocket, you know, and give all the reasons. It's like, yeah, but the number isn't 93.5. I don't care who you bet. I don't care who you liked. All I care is the current number and who you like versus the current number. And there'll be a $40 fine for anyone who talks about a bet that is not available at any book in the world anymore. The entire discussion should be based upon current numbers only.
Absolutely. Another pet peeve for you is these long shots that people, you know, like to look, they like to bet a little to win a lot, but your thoughts on these needle in a haystack, betting these Cinderellas to win the whole thing.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I was noticing Dr. Bob today was on DePaul, for instance. DePaul is obviously god awful, and winless teams in conference tournaments historically have done very well. So DePaul gets bet down from 24 to 22, and probably should play the favorite today. But the money line gets bet down. So think about this. Someone out there is like, well, sharp money. Well, money is coming in on DePaul, so I'm going to play DePaul at 40-1. That's got to be a good bet, right? And the truth is, historically, I don't want to hear about the Purdue money line anymore. Yes, I lost a zillion on it last year, you know, betting the favorite on the money line, and that wasn't a good bet by me. But in general, you'd be hard pressed to find a worse bet than trying to pick out like a 20-point underdog in the tournament. And against Vegas books, you're gonna get like 20-1. The true odds should be like 80-1. So think about that. You're getting short paid by 75%. And yet invariably when someone finally wins, you know, you have that miracle upset, then they'll post on Twitter, look at me. I was able to go ahead and get 24-1 on something that was just ridiculous. This happened with the Super Bowl. People are posting tickets. Oh, I bet overtime at 7-1, like they were geniuses, when it was like, you know, one of the worst bets imaginable in the Super Bowl. Yeah, it got home this year. Now it's 2-56.
You would agree UConn's the best team. Is there any value top of the board if you're getting UConn like 5-1, and just your general thoughts and who's actually going to win the whole thing?
You know, I changed my opinion. 2 weeks ago, I thought UConn was clearly the best team. Then, of course, I looked at, you know, they're not as good on the road, but they have a really favorable draw where they're staying in New York and Boston. So maybe you could argue they don't have to play on the road till the Final Four. I'm not sure UConn's better than Houston. I would say UConn and Houston are within a half a point of each other. I used to think UConn was 2 points better. I no longer think that. And I think Purdue is probably a point worse. And then there's a big drop off to the number four team. My pet peeve is there's some books putting up odds on, you know, will UConn or Purdue win the championship? And of course, it's both sides of the bet are horrendous because they have this enormous bid ask spread where it's like -340 +270. So, and then Jeff Benson would say, oh, the Theo hold is still only like 4.5%, Steve. It's a really good bet deal for the, you know, for the player, to which I'd respond, well, I'm going to open up my own Steve Fezzik roulette, low vig casino. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pay 30-1. If you bet on a team, if you bet on a number on the roulette wheel, I'm not paying 35, but you can bet the no, and you can lay -4,000. And guess what? My roulette wheel has a lower Theo hold than any other roulette wheel in the world because for whatever reason, the no on a, when you're betting a big underdog and you're betting the no, the theoretical hold is peanuts because even if I paid you nothing on betting the no on a roulette wheel, you're still going to win 37-38 of the time. So the maximum hold I can have when you're betting the no is 2.5%. So it skews all the statistics. Bottom line is that avoid betting the needle in the haystacks in almost all cases. There's always the exception to the rule. I think Loyola Chicago, when they're an 11 seed and they should have been a 5 seed, is probably the best exception to the rule.
What are some good tips for, I mean, we're recording this during conference tournament week. There's so many games on that applies to the big tournament as well. What are some tips in terms of money management where you wake up and you want to have action, but you want to pace yourself? What are your thoughts on how to manage that and how to manage your bankroll?
probably don't bet $80,000 on Purdue on the money line if you play them. That would be my number one tip. After that, in general, there really isn't any reason if you're not getting like a super rogue line, which you might, you know, like especially like on a Thursday night or Friday night public team, you might say this is one of the best bets of the year. But if your normal bet sizing is 500 on a game, you know, don't go crazy and suddenly like splashing the entire board. You know, a guy I've had at best a truculent relationship with, Alan Boston, for example, it's well documented in the book, The Odds. He talks about he was betting like a crazed man on March Madness games. And to me, this was a complete mystery. How the heck are you going to find your best bets of the year on these ultra analyzed games? Your biggest bets of the year should be Merrimack playing NC Greensboro in November when everybody's betting the NFL. I mean, that's where you should be finding the biggest missed line games. So if you normally bet 500 a game, don't be betting like 1500 all of a sudden because it's March Madness. Bet your normal bet size and don't feel like you have to have bets on one third of the games.
Last one before we get you out of here, NIT. That's a thing that not a lot of people are watching. Nobody watches. Nobody cares. Is that a good betting vehicle because of those reasons?
The NIT I love because it's my rare opportunity to jam in overs. Because think about this. A lot of times NIT teams are failed bubble teams. So they played 10 straight games where they needed the game like blood and they had to win an Iowa type of team. And then ultimately they didn't get there. So they really don't care. And you know what, when you don't care, just roll the ball out there. You know, we fought the good fight and now we're just going to have a happy action fun time. And so it is rarely wrong against openers to bet on NIT overs.
Bez, you're the best. If people are out in Vegas March this time of year, where's a good place to go? How do you get the deals? What are some tips there?
I'm going to give four sports books to recommend in Vegas. So number one, Circus Sports, Circus Swim Outdoors. Well, it's going to be 80 degrees in Vegas on Thursday. So for the first round game. So go to Circa. They go to a casino that specializes with a top sports book. That's three of them, the Westgate, the South Point, and Circa. They open up showrooms. There's plenty of viewing. You don't have to, if you want to pay $800 to sit at Fontainebleau and have like overpriced food and a crappy sports book, you go do it. But I assure you, you're probably going to have a better time at Westgate or South Point or Circa. And one dark horse, they just opened a casino, a Stations did, Durango. And here's my thinking, because it's brand new, a lot of people are creatures of habits. They always go to the same sports book for March Madness, the locals, each and every year. So probably like the restaurant overlooking the sports book, George's, that's probably going to be a good spot to be like hanging out, having some food and watching the games.
Bez, you're the best. Thanks for coming on. Where can everyone find you?
At Fezzik Sports on X/Twitter. I only sell, Will, at pregame.com. If you're buying my picks from my website, that's not me. That's somebody else. You're being scammed. Don't buy from that guy.
Have we ever found out who this imposter is?
Yeah, he's he resides in Indiana. He's a lifetime criminal. And people are like, I have this conversation 20 times a year. And people are like, well, why don't you just shut him down, Fez? And I always refer to them. I say, great, you shut him down if you think it's so easy, and I'll pay you $10,000. It's not nearly as easy as you think to when someone's, you know, pretending to be you to get rid of them.
Interesting. Bez, appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we'll catch up here down the road.
You're the best, Will. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. All right, that will do it. Thank you to Steve Fezzik. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back Monday morning. We will be breaking down the bracket. We will have all the lines. We will have all the matches. So we will cover that wall to wall. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. See you Monday.